Welcome to Linux Link Radio by TimeSys, the podcast for embedded Linux developers who want to simplify and speed up their custom platform development. Visit TimeSys.com today for access to our podcast archives.
Hi, this is Gene Sally.
And Maciej.
And we're doing a Linux Link Radio. Thanks for tuning in or listening or downloading or whatever you do. I know we've been absent. We haven't. We missed, I think, an episode technically last week because we've been out of town traveling quite a bit. And one of the places we stopped was ESC West, it was in San Jose this year at the San Jose Convention Center. I don't think of any other way to describe it.
Yeah, it's downtown San Jose, I guess. Most of our listeners have been to that show any show at that place, but yeah.
Yeah, so we were able to lasso a couple of people in. TimeSys had a booth there, and so we were able to lasso in some folks around the show floor that were doing some things that were interesting. And we interviewed them, and so we have a couple episodes that we'll be releasing with interviews.
Generally, actually, a few words about the show. I think it was a very successful show. There was a lot of new technologies that showed up, and we'll actually apply for you a couple of interviews with people from different companies that introduced those new technologies, some things that caught our eyes. It was growing, and I think that beginning with next year, there will be an additional space across the street from that show.
Yeah, there were a lot more people on the show floor from the last time I was there. It was before it was like the tumbleweeds were coming down between the – it was sparse. It really was.
But again, a number of different processors, software components that have been presented at the show, I think, also went up from last year.
Yeah, you know, over the 5 years I've been going to that, has been morphing very much from a hardware show to more of a software show.
That's true.
I wouldn't say 100%. That's not the. But there was, I know the first year I went to ESC, like half the show floor were people making connectors and boxes and,
And now
AC things and plugs and there weren't as many, right? Mm-hmm. Probably say less than half the people there were doing some sort of software.
And now you have a complete solutions that are promoted at the show that involve not only a hardware component but also software pieces and development tools and turnkey solutions.
Oh yeah. So one of the guys I ran across, his the company is Parallax, and they make something called the propeller chip. Mm-hmm. And I know I was wandering around the floor, and they had a cool booth, and they had this little self-balancing robot, which I thought, hey, robot self-balancing is interesting.
But that was only part of what was interesting about that robot.
Yeah. So, but I talked to the guy for a second. I think it was called My Dance Bot, and you can buy a kit for it or whatever. Mm-hmm. The first thing you run across is you get the sale, right? Someone's trying to sell you something, and then if you ask for the technical guys, then you can actually have an actual conversation. But mm-hmm. I ran across someone whose name was Jeff Martin, mm-hmm. and he was explaining to me how
nice person. Yeah,
yeah, he was very nice, and so he was explaining to me about the chip they use is called the propeller chip, mm-hmm. and had a cool little architecture diagram, and he explained to me how what made this chip a lot different than others is that it was several cores all on the same die, right. And they invented their own language, and they just got rid of those interrupts. And I thought to myself, yeah,
that's
right.
Catchy.
Yeah, right.
How?
Yeah, how? Explain to me. And really, they had he goes into it in the interview, which we'll cut to in a second because that's more interesting than we have to mm-hmm. say. But he talked about how they designed the chip from the beginning, recognizing that interrupts were in fact a band-aid or an implementation scheme for the fact that there was only one processor.
Yeah, a workaround, right?
Yeah, I think by buying into this one core, right, by designing something that had multiple cores on it, you could dedicate one core to wait whenever it was awoken when needed to handle this event.
One task that is basically bound to a specific core and can execute 100% of CPU time, and there's no contention.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting approach to an embedded system. I think that technologically, that just shows how advanced processors have been promoted at that show, mm-hmm. and what they're capable of doing. That particular processor in that robot application was reading data from different sensors mm-hmm. and keeping the robot in balance. Mm-hmm. So there was no overhead, there was no contention, and thanks to that multi-core nature of the chip that that company designed, the robot was able to control all the loops at a very tight periods.
Yeah, and it was really cool because the way they had things designed is they had a round robin system for accessing external things. So everyone may have shared the same pool of memory, but you know, this I wouldn't call it the scheduler, right? But you got some time window to access the main core of memory, and that was at a predictable interval, and that you could move your data around, and then you sort of lost your window at that point. You waited until it came by again. And when you think about real-time systems, real-time is more about predictable. Matter of fact, it's all about predictable. And so that really made it easy from a predictability standpoint, and just turns into the fact that, you know, can you run things fast enough in order for it to be practical in the real world?
And well, there are other challenges when you look at real-time and larger operating systems, including Linux, right? Challenges that Linux community has been dealing with for quite some time now, where you have to deal with overhead, preemptiveness of the Linux kernel, implementation of different communication interfaces just to ensure that communication between different processes in the same space, the unbounded priority inversion. All those things go away when you have a single task per core, per processor.
Oh, yeah.
And you just have your own dedicated memory, and processes can write and read to and from shared memory. We didn't actually drill down too much about how the synchronization on the memory access happens, but
I believe it's round robin.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, I probably may have gotten that really wrong. Well, I did listen to the interview, right? So I sounded, you know, more stupid than I usually sound. It was I know I clipped out most of the stupidity at the beginning.
It's not that, Gene. It's the fact you were in a Japan time zone we were interviewing.
So. The day before I just landed from I can't remember now. Yeah, I think the day before I came in from I was in Shirajuri. I think I'm mispronouncing that, which is a wonderful little town. It's about 3.5 miles west of Tokyo. And so I was most definitely on who knows what time.
Yeah. But I could tell just by looking at you.
Yeah. I solved it by, you know, attempting to sleep and then, you know, drinking 4 times the normal amount of caffeine in the morning without eating anything, right? In hopes that it would get absorbed faster.
Well, so
you can certainly hear it.
So let's enjoy that interview and let's hear you again after those couple of cups of coffee.
Oh no. Oh no.
We stopped by. Well, I was wondering around, and lo and behold, I came across your booth because it had a little robot that was balancing by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it moved a little bit, so it immediately caught my attention.
Yeah, you like those robots, do you? Yeah.
I know I have problems, right? And so it did manage to hold my attention
for a
second.
It's technology, so.
Yeah. So, and I stopped and I talked to someone there, and I can't remember the poor guy's name.
His name is Hanno.
Okay. And he said, hey, you know, we have this operating system, and it doesn't have any. I said, well, how does it work? He's like, well, first of all, we got rid of all the interrupts. We rethought, you know, real-time operating system, and there's no interrupts.
No interrupts.
And I thought to myself, yeah, right. And
hold on. Operating system without interrupts.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. And so I said, what? You know, explain this to me. And so he explained to me for a little bit, and you know how bad I am with that kind
of
stuff.
Well, you tried actually to explain that to me, and you were bad, yes.
No, stop. I said it had no interrupts. I got that right.
That's right.
Okay.
I got that right.
Got the most important thing right.
And then after that, it just all slid downhill. So I did manage. So later on, I figured we'd go back, and I grabbed Jeff, he, after some cajoling, was willing to talk to us about what's the operating system called?
This is actually, it's called the Propeller chip.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. It's not an operating system.
Yeah,
it's another thing I screwed up too, right?
Well, I'm telling you, you were trying to explain it to me. But
Jeff's really polite. So far, I'm entirely probably botching up this entire conversation. He's sitting there saying, I think I have an appointment now.
You know what, Jinx?
Let maybe Jeff introduce the product for a few minutes, and let's take it from there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the Propeller chip is our own silicon. It's a completely 100% custom design of our own, where we actually sat down over a course of years and
I got sitting down right.
Thought about what's wrong with microcontrollers that we use, because we use microcontrollers all the time and different development tools, and we have we run into the same frustrations that, you know, typical developers do. So we looked at that and decided, you know, we want to make something different. So we really thought about it from the ground up, And we weren't willing to, leave anything behind. We wanted to actually, question everything. So one of the things that came up, we had this idea, why don't we make these tiny little processors that are very, very simple, and you can connect them up and assign each one a specific task to do, and the whole collective of them work together to achieve some goal for an application. Well, eventually it grew into, let's just put all the processors on one chip. So we created the propeller chip, which has 8 processors on board.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And we completely did away with interrupts, because you don't need interrupts. The whole thing with interrupts that a lot of people don't understand is that they're actually a band-aid for lack of processors, because the technology wasn't really around to put multiple cores on one die in the past. So in order to deal with asynchronous events, like things like radio signals coming in, a keyboard input, things you don't know when it's going to happen, but you know it's going to happen sometime, you needed interrupts with a single processor. The way it works in the propeller chip is you just assign a processor to deal with that event. And it sits there and actually basically goes to sleep waiting for that event, but it's still kind of in a waiting state.
Okay.
So it's very low power, but the moment that the I/O pins change a certain way, however you specified it to change, it will wake up and execute the next instruction, next 100 instructions, however you tell it to do.
So does it mean that each processor is designed to do one single operation?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
You can definitely write your application that way. But typically, they do multiple operations.
Okay.
And but you could have a processor sitting there just generating video. That's another thing the chip does by itself, with just a few resistors on the outside.
Okay.
It can generate an NTSC or PAL display or a VGA display. Each of the processors has its own video generator hardware.
Okay.
And a couple of counters that you can use to generate some cool signals or do some simple Delta Sigma A to D. But you can have it do multiple things if you have the bandwidth within that processor. So maybe you have one processor handling keyboard input, which is a very low bandwidth thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very slow for the processor. It doesn't have to think about it that much.
That's right.
So it can also do maybe mouse input and maybe something else.
So
you have another processor dedicated to just video generation.
So how did you get away with no interrupts again? I'm sorry. It's okay.
Okay. Instead of interrupts, what you do is you say, okay, I'm going to have the second processor sit there and wait for an event from an RF device, or a keyboard event, or a mouse event, and it just sits there, and it's, in that particular case, it's dedicated to that situation, and it just goes to sleep waiting for an event. Imagine having one person sitting at a desk, typing on the keyboard. As soon as the phone rings, he's interrupted to go answer the phone. Maybe somebody comes to his office, he's interrupted to talk to them. Well, now take that and put 3 people there. One guy sitting there at the phone.
Waiting for the phone.
One guy doing the keyboard, one guy waiting for somebody to come to the door. And the guys at the phone or the door are essentially asleep until somebody arrives. Meanwhile, the other guy can just keep going on with whatever he's doing on the computer.
So, if, for example, you monitor a keyboard input, the processor that's monitoring that simply looks for change in voltage level on specific pins?
Correct.
Ah.
Yeah, in fact, there's dedicated hardware inside of each processor. It's just a simple state machine that you give it a pattern, like a 1010 pattern, and tell it, I want to sleep until these pins either equal this state or don't equal this state. And then it goes to sleep. The clock signal is actually prevented from executing or from causing any execution within the chip or within that
processor. On the chip.
And the,
see, I'm listening.
It's interrupt masking. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's only one of me. that guy is... I lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Where was I?
you were talking about input signal arriving on a pin and then...
Right, because at this point, this one processor out of the array was sleeping.
Yeah,
right.
It wasn't consuming any clock cycles, and it was waiting for a certain mass to be...
Yeah, there's a tiny little piece of hardware inside that sits there, and every clock cycle compares what it sees on the pins to the pattern that you gave it. Mm. And if it doesn't match...
It's not going to wake up.
Then it doesn't.
Then no instructions execute. Therefore, nothing happens.
Yeah, and very little power is used to execute that little process because it's not, you know, it's just a few little transistors.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So, and at the same time, you can along with this, the application that's downloaded to the chip can choose to launch and kill off processors at will. Depending on the need. So you might have something that's maybe a portable device that has to pay attention to a keyboard, maybe some kind of pressure pen input, maybe a Bluetooth connection or something. But when it doesn't have to do, when there's no like high bandwidth information to deal with, it can actually shut down all the processors that normally deal with that and have just one or two wait for those events, and then as soon as it needs to do high bandwidth stuff, it cranks it up.
So it's like built-in power management at the
same time. Did you actually compare the power consumption to some of the actual processors?
You mean within the chip?
Other
processors?
ARM processors, PowerPC, MIPS. I'm just curious if... So maybe you have numbers in terms of power consumption for your processor.
Well, I can tell you that when a processor is running at 80 megahertz, it's like 500 microamps per MIP, basically, that you get. So you end up with... what is it? It's like 80 milliamps running at 160 MIPS. And when they're shut down, it's nanoamps. I mean, it's really tiny.
Wow. So what are the typical applications for a processor?
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people ask this question.
Yeah.
We designed it to try to be sort of a single solution for a lot of applications. So that's why we built a video generator into it.
Okay.
We have these little counter modules that can be configured to do different things. So that you can put this chip in a design and maybe you have a keyboard or a display or both of them, you don't need a special chip to do video generation. You can do it right on there with just 8 or less resistors on the outside. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the keyboard. It's just a simple connection with passive components. So the idea was to simplify embedded designs and also lessen the cost by having fewer parts essentially a more capable device that's able to do all these things at once.
So in your booth you are showcasing the robot, right?
And the balancing bot.
So what are the functions that you realize in that processor for the robot?
For the robot?
Yes.
Well, in that particular case, what it's doing is it has an accelerometer and a gyroscope, a little solid-state gyroscope, that it's monitoring to determine what angle it's sitting at and where the main force of gravity is so that it can tell, you know, how it's balancing.
I see.
Then it goes through some calculations based on those measurements to drive the motors a certain direction to keep itself balanced. Okay. So if it's leaning a little too much one way, it'll move. If somebody pushes it a little bit, it's able to move aggressively to try to balance itself before it topples over.
So just out of curiosity, how did you implement that?
Well, actually, I didn't implement that.
Don't worry about it.
The gentleman you spoke to, Hanno, is actually one of our customers.
Okay.
And he decided to use the propeller chip for it because of its multiprocessor capabilities.
Yeah.
It kind of lends itself well to robotics where you're trying to monitor multiple sensors at once and doing calculations based on the data that you received.
Mm-hmm.
He chose the propeller chip on his own and built up this little example just kind of something for fun.
Well,
and we got word of it and invited him to come to our booth to help us advertise the chip.
It definitely worked, and Gene is a living proof of it.
Well, I mean, think about the application. It seems ideal, right? Because you have a bunch of, could probably dedicate a processor per axis or something. Right?
Sure, yeah.
And then begin to decide what to do based on that.
Yeah.
Right.
How scalable is it?
How scalable? Mm-hmm. It's very scalable. It's meant to be really general purpose. So there's really not... there's very few applications we've found so far that you really can't apply it to, except for some really high-speed applications like maybe 100 base T Ethernet.
Yeah.
That's something that we're planning to be able to do in one of the future chips.
Because it sounds like, the core or cog, I think is what you call them. There's like, what, eight?
Yes, there's eight.
And can you have several of those in work in parallel, or the next chip you're working on has more than eight cogs inside of it?
Yeah, at any time you can have them work in parallel, or you can have them communicate to each other, or maybe some communicate and others work completely independently. Mm-hmm. And that can change dynamically over the course of the application.
Okay.
For our future chips, we found that some of the applications people are applying this to are higher resolution screens, like maybe they want to create some kind of a kiosk display.
Okay.
And in order to do that, we needed a little bit more memory and maybe a little more processing speed. So the next chip that we're working on, the current design, this might change over time, but the current design is 16 cogs, 16 processors.
Yeah.
And either 128K or 256K of EEPROM, which is about four times or more than what it currently has.
Okay.
That gives you enough buffer space to build up a rasterized image for some graphics.
Okay.
Also, at the same time, the main memory that's shared amongst the cogs, mm-hmm. In kind of a round-robin fashion, the access time to that is basically one every eight clock cycles, essentially. In the future chip, every time slice that you get to access that main memory, you'll be able to actually read or write 8 32-bit values at once.
Okay, so you have more time, more access per window. Visit.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. You'll be able to achieve a lot more. So that plus the fact that it will be a pipelined architecture, so mm-hmm. you'll have essentially one instruction per clock cycle executed, will significantly increase the processing power. And right now, the current one is doing 160 MIPS at 80 megahertz, and that's with an external clock of just 5 megahertz or 10 megahertz.
Yeah, I know that's one thing we sort of breezed past, and that was how you handle the... So you have N many number of these cogs running sort of as a confederation, right?
Right.
And you do have shared resources. I know you're talking about the hub system,
mm-hmm.
and that's also another way to almost a pre-planned scheduling. Because when I look at this, you have a very deterministic scheduling system.
Yes, yeah.
Which is very clear. It's almost a side effect of the design.
It's not the intent of the design.
Yeah.
As you probably know, for real-time processing, you need determinism. You don't want jitter introduced because the timing changes because you decided to turn off a processor or something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we made it so that regardless of how many processors are running or not running at any given time, it always takes the same amount of time for each processor to get its time window to access the shared resources.
All one scheduler.
Right.
Yeah, it is.
So it makes it easy to synchronize. You could, at the start of the application, you can synchronize up all the cogs that need to communicate with each other, and then never have to touch it again. They always stay in sync because they're always running off the same clock source.
Yeah, by that point, you don't have a choice, which is the idea of good design, right?
Right.
It simply runs well.
And that's what you count for in real time, right?
Yeah.
You want to have constant intervals in which you schedule tasks.
Yeah.
It's
really nice that their intervals are fast,
but
the trick is having predictable intervals, not necessarily ones.
And one thing to point out is that the I.O. pins are not... they are a shared resource, but they're not mutually exclusive. The I/O pin control is all gated with just ANDs and gates and OR gates.
Okay.
So at any clock cycle, any processor can read any I/O pin or write to any I/O pin.
Okay.
And of course, you develop your application. You want to develop it in the same way where you usually have one processor deal with certain pins and another one deal with other pins, and they don't cross over, but they certainly can. In fact, we have an application to get higher...
sampling rate, I guess.
Almost. Yeah, to get a higher sampling rate or to do things like a higher resolution for a video display, mm-hmm. we actually used multiple cogs where one decides, okay, I'm going to take scan line 1 and 2, and the other one's going to take 3 and 4. And while the first one's drawing the first two, the other one is generating the data to draw the second.
Oh, and then you just they go switch round off. Robin.
They're yeah. both dealing with the I/O pins, but in kind of a handshaking fashion where it's yeah. it's only one at a time.
It's a synchronous approach. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But at least it's a very simple, it's the whole idea is that it'd be very, very simple and easy to understand and easy to control.
Yeah.
So that you don't have any funny stuff going on.
Yeah. We actually have done a lot of recordings and discussions with customers that were interested in real time. We covered that from a Linux operating system standpoint, mm-hmm. but having you introduce that from a hardware standpoint actually is also very interesting. And thank you very much for that.
Yeah, we really appreciate you coming by. It was fascinating. And like I said, you're with Parallax.
Yes.
And I'm sure we'll hear all kinds of interesting stuff coming out of your company over the next year or so.
I hope so. This product is about 2 years old, so it's just starting to be embraced by the community.
Yeah. It takes a while for you to get
some traction.
Yeah,
that's just the nature of the market.
That's right. Well, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So.
Hey, so hopefully you enjoyed this particular interview and Gene talking fast after cups of coffee.
I was very impressed that he didn't get up and leave after about the first 10 seconds because he was standing there, the poor guy, and his eyes rolled. I mean, they rolled all the way in the back of his head, and he's thinking, oh my God, what a fundamental mistake I made, but they're kind of having me here, and I'm kind of stuck.
No, not true. He was very happy to be talking to us about his technology, his company's technology, and sharing with us some of the technicalities of a solution.
Yeah, certainly. He was certainly one of the sharper knives in the drawer.
We are going to also play a couple other episodes. I mean, mm-hmm. Interviews, should yeah. I say. And those will be released most likely at the same time. So if you have them on your iPod or other MP3 players, you might also want to switch and listen to other interviews. We've been talking about graphical environments, I believe. We've been talking about testing.
Yeah, the testing interview was actually pretty cool. And then we had two people that did graphics. Then we had one guy with the itsy bitsy chip. And I thought the funny thing for that is that, you know, the
display.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, the actual, it was like a FPGA-based chip.
Oh, Vertex 4.
Yeah. Where the folks that bought it wanted it to be bigger, right? It was one of the comments. I thought, wow, you don't hear that too often, yeah. right?
We also have a person that's going to talk about virtualization and simulation.
Yeah.
And
he almost walked out on us, too, I think.
There's quite a lot of different topics that we covered during that show, and mm-hmm. hope you will enjoy them as well.
Yeah, thanks. And is there any questions or comments, send them along, podcast@timesys.com, or you can visit us at www.timesys.com and click on the podcast button. And then I think there's one, I think they have linuxlinkradio.com as well.
There is, yeah.
Yes, write us in, write us questions, comments, and we just released, even though I recorded it, I don't know how long ago before the guys in marketing finally got around to pushing the button to send it out. But I got a couple interesting pictures of crashed Windows devices. So if you have any of those, send them along. We have we'll send you a shirt if you have your address and whatever else.
Yeah,
it's your cool shirt.
On a shirt, that's actually a good point. We have those nice shirts made for us for our Linux Link Radio with a nice slogan underneath. But we'll keep it secret, and I'm sure you'll enjoy them. And you'll have a laughter when you get them. So.
Yeah, well, that's the hope, right? Hey, well, take it easy. And
thanks.
Again, yeah, questions or comments, podcast@timesys.com. Bye.
Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by TimeSys. Are you new to embedded Linux? Looking for a way to simplify your next project? The Linux Link service by TimeSys makes it easy to build your custom embedded Linux platform. Go to timesys.com today or call 866-392-4897 to learn more.